I wonder if any of my listeners, especially those active in the stock market, remember the historical significance of last Thursday, March 9th, 2017. Well, believe it or not, that day marked the 8th year anniversary of when stocks bottomed out on March 9th, 2009. It was the worst of the bloodbath of the 2008 financial crisis. But let's first recap what happened. The 2007 to 2009 financial crisis spawned a 17-month bear market that lasted from October 9, 2007 to March 9, 2009. In that period, the S&P lost approximately 50% of its value. While the decline was incredibly nasty, the duration of this bear market was relatively short due to the extraordinary interventions by the government and the central bank to prop up at-risk companies. The bear market was confirmed in June of 2008 when the Dow Jones Industrial Average had fallen 20% from its October 2007 high, which it reached after a heady bull market between 2002 and 2007 when property prices and stock values were on a tear. On October 11, 2007, the Dow hit a peak of 14,198 before it started its decline. The decline of 20% by mid-08 was in tandem with other stock markets across the globe. On September 29, 2008, the Dow experienced a record-breaking 777-point drop to close at 10,365. And then it hit a market low of 6,443 on March 6th of 09. 6,443. It's now hovering around 21,000. Losing over 54% of its value since the high in 2007. The bear market then reversed course on March 9th of 2009, and the Dow rebounded in the next 3 weeks more than 20% from its low, up to 7,900, and then it went up 30% by mid-May and over 60% by the end of the year. Interestingly, when stocks bottomed out that day 8 years ago amidst fear, doom, and gloom, the Wall Street Journal's Money and Investing section ran a story with the title, How Low Can Stocks Go? And back then, it really wasn't an idle question. The Dow was on its fourth straight week of losses, while the broader S&P 500 was below 700 for the first time in 13 years. Goldman Sachs put out a research report that warned that the S&P 500 could fall to as low as 400. Imagine that. Goldman Sachs, the so-called ultimate insider on Wall Street, was so gloomy on stocks and yet completely misread the tea leaves, predicting another 40% drop in the S&P 500 from its 700 level. That's stunning. So 8 years ago, on March 9, 2009, the Dow closed at 6547, the S&P 500 was at 677, and the NASDAQ closed at 1269. Fast forward to March 9, 2017, and the Dow closed at 20,858, up almost 220%, or about 18% a year on average. The S&P 500 is now near 2365, up 250%, or about 19.6% on average per year, and the NASDAQ is near 5,840, up the most with a gain of 360%, or about 24% per year. That's a pretty phenomenal bull market. And now 8 years later, we know without a doubt that March 9th, 2009 was the bottom of the months-long financial panic that wiped away trillions of dollars in assets. But on what now appears to have been the best buying opportunity of a generation, many only wondered how much lower the markets would tumble. And this underscores a recurring theme I point to, that emotion, fear, and uncertainty get the better of even the most experienced and qualified investors in the market, and that it's futile to try and call a bottom in real time, and that investors should always look for dips as long-term buying opportunities on good quality stocks. Now, I was an investment advisor, of course, during that period of time, and on March 9th, 2009, I remember like it was yesterday, I would not buy on that day. As a fiduciary, legally in charge of other people's money, I thought that the economy was too worrisome to commit clients' funds. But by May, June or so, I started to feel more confident. I waited for confidence to appear back in the market. and started to come back in. You know, looking back, everywhere you turned on that March 9th day in 09, it looked like the economy was ripping apart at the seams. Billionaire T. Boone Pickens had just announced that he was pulling back his plans to build a massive wind farm in Texas because of the lack of investor interest. A managing partner at a hedge fund interviewed by the New York Times was advising well-off clients to buy shotguns to protect themselves against social unrest if the market fell any lower. I guess next time we hear about shotguns, we should maybe think that that's a market low. Maureen Dowd, you know, the fiery columnist for the New York Times, lamented that General Motors was near bankruptcy and that the president had to deny that he was a socialist. She also wrote that, quote, "The only bracing symbol of American strength right now is the image of Michelle Obama's sculpted biceps." And over on Comedy Central, Jon Stewart was savaging CNBC for its role on downplaying the severity of the financial crisis with a withering takedown, and he was talking to Jim Cramer at the time. "If I had only followed CNBC's advice, I'd have $1 million today, provided, of course, that I had started with $100 million. And remember the much-criticized TARP bailout where, under this program, the government gave hundreds of billions of dollars to prop up iconic American corporations that were on the brink of collapse? The government received large chunks of shares in return, effectively giving U.S. taxpayers large equity ownerships in firms such as General Motors and almost 80% of American International Group, so-called AIG. And also the fact that the American public was paying AIG, who was then paying its counterparties like Merrill Lynch and Goldman Sachs, full price on the $70 billion worth of derivatives, and that spawned persistent conspiracy theories. But guess what? That bet paid off very nicely for the government, with huge equity gains on those positions, and I guess you can say unwittingly, the government bought low and sold high. The financial sector saw one of its few positive signs also when Warren Buffett argued that his holdings in Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank Corp. should appear, quote, better than ever in 2012. And with blood on the streets, the legendary Mr. Buffett stood strong in his support and belief in the American economy, and he also made some well-timed investments there as well. Still, the once high-flying financial sector was humbled. Bank America traded for just $3.68 a share. It's now around 25. That's a gain of almost 600%. The credit card issuer Capital One Financial traded at $9.20 a share. It's now around 92. That's up 900%. So while Buffett stood strong, several so-called financial pundits were telling investors that buy and hold investing was dead. The only way you can make real money in the market in the future would be to strategically time your trades and take your gains whenever you could get them. Advice that could not be more untrue. And that reminds me of the time that I bought Amazon back then at $10 a share. And then I sold it at $30 a share. And I thought, you know, gee, you never go broke taking a gain. And sure enough, the stock's selling over $800 a share today. Silly me. There were also some other optimistic signs. As the federal government began to send its stimulus dollars into the economy, some on Wall Street were comforted and predicted that things would only get better from there on, which they did, beyond the wildest dreams of even those optimists. So the lesson here is this. Stay away from timing the market, because those who got out in 2008 or early 09 likely missed out on a lot of the gains they would have gotten by just staying in. Even if you had sold as the market was declining and avoided much of the pain, most of those who did sell did not get back in because they remained disbelievers throughout the subsequent rise. And unfortunately for some of them, many remain still, to this day, out of the market. Also, stay invested with a portfolio of high-quality investments, or if they're mid or low-quality, make sure you own a slew of them in mutual funds or ETFs. And finally, keep some cash on the side and deploy it when shares drop dramatically, because they almost inevitably rise back phoenix-like and soar higher from the ashes of market crashes.